And we welcome everybody into another edition of the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series, which can be found right here on Branson Podcast Network. And episodes are presented and powered by our friends at Arvest Bank. Also, I want to remind everybody listening to this episode series for the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast, if you would like to nominate a hero, we encourage you to do that on the main page here at the Branson Podcast Network. If you would like to nominate a hero, we recommend you do that right there on the main bio page for the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series. Click the link and share your story today. Welcome into our current episode of the podcast series. I am Josh Grisham, joined by my host in studio, Miss Pam Yancey with Arvest Bank. Dear, it is good to be back in the studio, back behind the mic, with another story to share.
Hey, Josh, you know, this is one of my favorite things to do, spending time with you and talking to our heroes. What a great way to spend a little bit of time. And so I, too, am happy to be back today.
And a lot of gratitude and a lot of thanks going out to Sarah Best. She is our woman behind the scenes that works with the nominations and then forwards them down for Pam and I for scheduling. A great young man in studio got a chance to meet as we were getting ready for the series, and he had some miles to put in to come down and see us, and we appreciate the trip and trek. He is the Assistant Chief of Training with the Joplin Fire Department, Dustin Lunau. Dustin, I just want to say again, sir, thank you for putting in the miles, and thank you for taking time to come down and share the inside information about your career, your journey with the Joplin Fire Department, and serving the community. Thank you for being here on this episode.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. I'm really looking forward to this. I took the opportunity to actually listen to several of the podcasts on the way in. Really enjoyed the podcast, the number one with the Branson Fire Chief. I don't know the gentleman firsthand.
Ted Martin.
Chief Martin. And but, boy, you could sure hear his heart. His dedication to the community and how he views his people and the area that he serves and protects is amazing.
You know, and I appreciate the good feedback, and I love the fact that you got a chance to listen to some of the other episodes in the series. Let me just start there with you first and just kind of get some insight from you. Listening to those episodes and just listening to the line workers, the emergency personnel with TCAD, and of course Ted's story, what did you think about just the transparency side of that and really getting an opportunity to educate the community at large and just really give a bird's eye view of what you guys experienced day to day? What did you think about that just listening to the episodes?
I thought it was amazing, the opportunity to put faces and stories and really put personalities behind these vehicles we see running and these actions and things that make the news stories, being able to see that and kind of humanize them. And people can relate with that, right? I mean, we can relate with those stories. And hopefully, you know, we can inspire others to, you know, maybe it's not emergency services. Maybe it's something else that their heart is in. But follow that. Do that and be a part of that community. And that's how we'll make a difference.
Now, Dustin Lunau is our guest. And again, he is the Assistant Chief of Training for the Joplin Fire Department. And I'm going to go back in time. And you know, by listening to the podcast, I do that a lot in this particular series. And Pam knows as well. I want to go back in time for you personally. Obviously, you've got family in the Kimberling City area, as we learned getting ready for the episode. And you yourself are up in the Joplin area. For you, Joplin native for the family, or were you born and raised in Kimberling? Where did you grow up, sir?
So we moved a little bit around when I was younger. So I was originally born in Oklahoma City.
Okay.
So that is where our family land was. It was there for like 108 years before Grandma finally sold the old farm. But
boomer sooner.
Well, you say that. I'm actually, families divide, and it's either Oklahoma State or University of Oklahoma. And go Pokes all the way. So there's that debate. But yeah, we moved up when I was in high school to the Joplin area.
Okay.
My dad had taken a job with Missouri Southern State University at the time. And so that's kind of where I call home, because, you know, when you go to high school, that first couple of years, junior high school, it's kind of where you really kind of attach and root down.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it for me. We lived in a small community, just outside, just to the north by the airport, Carl Junction Airport Drive area.
Yes.
And
know it well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, graduated from Carl Junction High School in, 94.
How big was your graduating class?
It was 108.
Wow. Gosh, so, that, Josh, you know, at Snowball, I was one of four. So that's a great big class.
Oh, you've not told me that yet since we've known each other. Wow. Four for you and 108 for Dustin.
Yeah.
So. Small town.
It's a small town. And, you know, moving back, we did move around just a little bit, and we left the community. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but we left the community at one point and went down to the Tulsa area.
Okay.
And I was able to come back 5 years ago to this position, and coming back home was awesome. My kids going through high school there, you know, graduating the same high school, it's amazing how you can start seeing some of those same faces and connections.
How much of a change was it for your kids graduating high school? What were their graduating classes like? Was there a big seismic shift?
Yeah, it was about double that, right? I think it's like 2.25.
That's not that big.
No.
There's growth there.
Right. Yeah. And there is. And now, you know, Carl Junction was quite a bit smaller. Now, you know, they play Branson in, you know, regional tournaments and their division. So, yeah, it's great. It's great to be back at home. It's great to be a service to the community. So,
wow. So let me ask you this. Obviously, young man, small town life for you growing up. What was your mother and father's career when you were a young man growing up? What were they doing?
Right. So my mother and lover, she is a lifelong student. She loves to learn.
Oh, that's
it's
cool.
Just her
that's
thing. Cool. So she, as long as I can remember, she's always been in a school getting a degree for something. So she's got multiple degrees in this, that, and the other. And she is right now she has a music company. They do education, like music education for different persons in the Tulsa area. And she loves it. My dad had worked in city government in the Oklahoma City area. And when he moved up to Joplin, he was the assistant director of the physical plant. So he took care of all the grounds, maintenance, buildings, all that fun stuff. That's kind of what that looked like. My dad was at Air Force when I was younger, but that was kind of their background. Coming up, growing up, my dad was one of those guys, still is to this day. He can build anything. We recently this summer built a garage in my house, and both my brothers and my dad showed up, and we had a three-day weekend barn raising.
Full-on family event. Your
absolutely
brothers and your dad.
Yes.
Wow. So that tells me, so you've got siblings, so where are you at as far as your siblings? Are you middle, oldest, youngest?
So I am in the middle. I have an older brother, and then I have a younger brother and a younger sister, and I have a sister that lives up in Nixa.
Oh, wow. So big family for you then.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really great. We have a really good family.
I love that.
I love him saying that his mother was a lifelong learner. I love that.
And even to this day, your mother has not gotten away from that. She continues she's sharing her passion, her education, her knowledge with everybody else. She's giving back even now to this day.
Absolutely. And the kind of funny part is that we always... we have a saying in our house that we hug with sarcasm.
With sarcasm.
Yes, absolutely.
That's going to stick out in our minds in this episode.
We always tease, me and my older brother, always teasing her about being a student and those who can't do teach and things like that, which is totally wrong. But yes, absolutely. And here I am in my profession as a training chief. And I'm actually currently finishing my master's at Drury. So
congratulations for that. How far are you in on that, on your master's?
I'm 1 year in. I'll be really honest. It is an amazing program they have there for public service, fire, EMS, police. It is really an amazing program that they brought people from the area. I know there's local fire chiefs here in the Springfield area, Ozark, Nixa, that have built this program. Some names that come out of Northwest Arkansas that built the program. And I actually walked away from a different program halfway through it because this has been so amazing.
You, Pam, you know what that says to me with Dustin going after his master's? You know what that tells me, Dustin? That means that your mother is sitting right up on your shoulder with every class you
take.
It is.
I'm pretty sure she's giggling right now because as much as we teased her. But yeah, here I am. When I came out of high school, I did not function well. I was able to work with my hands. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I went into construction, making, you know, good money, things like that. My dad worked at the college. So obviously I'm going to go to college and I could go for free.
Yes.
And talk about a wasted opportunity there. I spent a couple of semesters seeing how many parking tickets I could get and how fast I could fail out of class.
That speaks to many of us out there listening to this episode.
Right? So I think it would have been a lot better if I would have got out and like gone into the military or something, Air Force or something, because I just came out and I was just lost. I didn't know my direction. I did not know where I wanted to go.
Did you get any... And I'm glad you mentioned that. I mean, you could have gone to the Air Force, didn't go that particular direction, not really knowing what you wanted to do. I mean, gosh, when you got out of high school and obviously college and all that stuff, what type of feedback were you getting from mom and dad at that time? Did they tell you, you know, we want you to just go out there and pursue whatever it is you want to go after?
Right.
What type of insight were you getting from mom and dad at that point? What were they telling you when you were younger?
They were very supportive.
Yeah.
So I had and still have issues, if you ask my wife, with cars. I love cars. I love turning wrenches. That's what I do to relax.
I like that a lot.
Yes,
I
really, really enjoy it. And it kind of started out. When I got out of high school, I went and bought a 68 Mustang, and I would rather turn wrenches on it than go to college. And of course, I got a student loan to buy another car, not to go to college. Not smart, obviously. but I was too busy playing around.
Darn that debt, I tell you.
I was too busy playing around with cars than to pay attention in school. But they were supportive. They basically said, listen, you're either in school full time, or, you know, you need to get a job and you need to be productive. One of the two. And I totally agree with that. I understand that completely. So
that's direct from mom and dad. Right there.
So I started working and, doing construction, finally worked for a gentleman that had a local shop there in Joplin. Mm-hmm. And, he helped me out quite a bit. And a couple of different odd jobs. And so in the summer, I would go down and see my grandma because she's still down in Oklahoma City on the family farm and she's not leaving it. So every summer I'd go down, spend 2 weeks and whatever she needed, all the groundwork or, work on her car or whatever needed to happen, get the tractors up and running and that side of thing. And my grandma was awesome. She was she's kind of a spitfire. Love her, miss her to this day. And she said, I've got something for you to do. I'm like, sure, what do you got? She's like, tomorrow morning you need to show up at Oklahoma City Fire Station 33. Okay, why? She's like, well, you don't know, but it's your second uncle, and he's a firefighter, and I think you would like it. And I thought, okay, well, I'll go. Sure, why not? And so I went and absolutely fell in love and immediately went back to Missouri Southern, who had a Fire 1 and 2 program at the time, enrolled, got my Fire 1 and 2. Got my EMT immediately after that, got a position with Carthage Fire Department, and then stayed in school and got my paramedic license. And that was my first shift on in Carthage was July 4th of 99.
Jeez.
So my grandmother actually is the one that...
I love that story.
Could you be any more perfect for this episode, Dustin? Because, I mean, you took the question right out of my mouth. That was going to be a natural segue for me to ask you, why fire?
Right.
Why did you make this choice? Your grandmother.
Yep, my grandmother. And interestingly enough, I managed to carry like a D average in college. As soon as I started paying for school.
He's so relatable to me. Yeah. I'm not the best student.
Soon as I started paying for school, I've maintained a 4.0, oddly enough. Imagine, right?
Night and day, right? I mean, did you surprised even yourself, right? I imagine.
Definitely my dad, I guarantee. I had those college credits. I didn't know what to do. I worked at Carthage Fire for right at 4 years, and I wanted to go somewhere bigger. And so I moved down to the Tulsa metropolitan area, and I won't go into that specific department, but
that is a massive swing going from Carthage to Tulsa.
Area. It was not Tulsa Fire. But it was just not the greatest fit for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did spend 18 years there before coming home, but it just... I did have a captain that invested in me, and he said, listen, you're either learning or you're either moving forward or you're not. One of the two. The life doesn't stand still. Either be a participant or just get on the sideline. One of the two. And he actually drove me down to Oklahoma City and enrolled me in Oklahoma State and said, you're going to finish your degree. And I thought, I'm going to finish my degree. Okay. And so I thought, I'll start off easy and I'll work on my associates. And so I did. I started off Oklahoma State in Oklahoma City has a great associates fire program. All of fire service training comes out of Stillwater for OSU for the nation. Fire service training there. I got my associate's, and it's an associate in municipal fire protection. And I thought, well, I'm used to taking a class every now and then. I might as well just continue to take a class every now and then. And so a few years later, his mother again,
right back to it.
A few years later, now I have, you know, I have my bachelor's in municipal fire protection. And it's honestly, it's a pretty challenging degree. It's a IFSEC certified bachelor's degree out of Oklahoma State. And I was, you know, now it's what I graduated 2019, and I was sitting there. I thought, well, you know, there's going to come a day that I'm going to look at, you know, possibly promoting. I don't want to go anywhere. I'm home, but I need to look at what, you know, what does that look like for me? Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, you know, I'm used to taking a class. So I went right back, and now I'm in the master's program. So I can't tell you of all the degrees right now, I'm really enjoying the master's program. That's kind of what that looks like. We have a lot of new firefighters coming on right now because we're getting to open up a seventh station. Joplin's the fifth largest fire department in the state of Missouri.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's it's growing rapidly. About 10,000 calls annually. We average about one working structure fire every 3 days. Our people are amazing. They have such an amazing heart. I have an inner struggle in myself making sure that I do my job good enough, or I want to prepare or give them whatever they need to succeed. Mm-hmm. I see, you know, there's a transition that happens there that my success comes from seeing those crews succeed because, you know, that's my job. That's my job, is to ensure that they have the tools available to them and the training necessary mitigate whatever shows up. And, you know, I take that very seriously. But we have an amazing group there, and I've really, really enjoyed it. I really enjoy my job. The people I work with are absolutely second to none.
Well, and you've really framed up the work that you have put in and you continue to put in now in service of community and fire, paramedics license, $19.99, getting started, all this education, all this time, all this training, multiple locations that you have put in. I've just got to say, from me to you, there's a lot of respect there. That's a lot of work to put in. It takes a person with a certain acumen, a certain drive and desire to say, I want to go and do my master's. There's a lot of time involved in that. It's not just an overnight thing. It's not just a year. This is a while to get this stuff done and knocked out. When it comes to fire, and you were taking your first courses, and you were training, and you were going through this, how did you develop the mindset? I mean, obviously making the choice to serve after discussion with your grandmother, and obviously having family that are close in the service as well, that is a way of helping. But how did you come to grips with, I guess, defining your mettle? That resolve, and how did you come to grips with dealing with fear, a fear of uncertainty and the unknown? Right. I'd love you just to tell us about that, because not everybody understands that. I mean, what's the mental headspace like to get that developed? And did you have that, or did you have to find that?
That's a great question. And, you know, a lot of individuals in emergency services usually come from some type of a sports or some type of a background where they had sports in high school or college or something like that. They understand that, you know, there's a lot more there than you think there is. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a wall there, and usually it's just mental. You just have to find your way through it. So that's where a lot of that comes from, is just, there's not a lot of quit. I'm just not somebody who quits. I'm going to work it through, and somebody's probably going to have to pull me off and say, you're done. You need to stop. Because it's just not my thing. I don't like to leave things undone. I don't, mm-hmm. It's not kind of who I am. So I think that kind of goes to it, is just, there's just a lot of resolve internally to complete whatever task you start.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's where it kind of lies. A lot of the people that do very, very well in emergency services, have, like I said, like that, a lot of military, personnel. And although I did not go in the military, I have the highest degree of respect for those individuals. Their service to country and community is second to none. Mm-hmm. They understand, the team before self. They understand things that we have to try to teach others. So that's kind of where I'm at on it.
If I can ask you, And this is a good question. And it's a question I have yet to ask, but I'm just curious what your take is on it. When it comes to somebody getting into fire, whether it is in a small town or a massive city, what do you think defines the core DNA? What makes a good fireman? This is the drive to do the job, but also I think there's a commitment to service, protecting life, property, right, others, defending their community members. What is the core DNA? What's the makeup of a good fireman, if you had to put it into words?
Hope.
That's
I think that is a good word. I think that is the core, because every one of the individuals that I have ever worked for believed it could be better.
Mm-hmm.
And they understood the way to make it better is to be the difference. Don't look for it. Make it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the core difference. We have a lot of conversations, and I try to talk to our cadets and the recruits that we have in academy. The fire service has drastically changed. When I, you know, was testing and getting in, I had these, you know, my paramedic, my fire one and two, and I was testing against 60 other people for one spot. And now we're transitioning into where we're out and recruiting, and we're trying to get as many individuals as possible to come in. We will train you. We will pay you during the training. We'll get you certified to the fire one and two in the EMT levels. Joplin has an amazing training facility, state-of-the-art facility, which is awesome that we have that tool available to us. But what we're seeing is we see individuals coming in that don't really have that background, and so we have to have those discussions. You know, what does this look like to you? What do you believe the fire service has to offer you? But more importantly, what do you have to offer to it? We discuss the difference between, we call the difference between renters and owners.
Are you in it for the long haul?
Absolutely.
Or are you out?
Yeah. Are you here to make a difference? Are you here to make this your own? Are you here to make a positive change? Whatever you believe that is, whatever your heart stand is, are you ready to fight that fight when it gets tough? Are you an owner?
Is there a common thread in the response you get from would be cadets that are going to go into training? What is the most common response you see from would be firemen and women?
The most common is, as we hire, I say younger and younger, but it may be that I'm getting older. I'm not sure.
Could be a little about.
That's always the hard part, right? You realize you're not the young pup. Yeah.
We were sitting there, and we like to make a lot of references to, like, TV shows or movies or different things or one-liners from this show or that show. And I realized that there was nobody in the room that had been born before the year 2000. And I thought,
oh, my gosh, that can't be easy to see.
Yeah, they told me this was coming, but I don't remember.
Yeah.
So, no, I apologize. I kind of sidelined there. But, these individuals, they want to make a difference. Mm-hmm. They're unsure of themselves, just to be really honest. They're unsure of what their capabilities are. They believe they understand what's involved in the fire service, but it's, our job to prepare them in every way, shape, and form, which includes, that kind of mental fortitude and Absolutely. The viewpoint that they take towards their community.
Mm-hmm.
We call it pride and ownership. We talked about being a renter or That's an owner, but we're very big on pride and ownership and tradition.
Mm-hmm.
We have a ceremony when our cadets graduate in which they are presented with a brick. And the brick is some of their last remaining bricks from station that was destroyed during the Joplin tornado. And the whole purpose of that is that you are now a part of something bigger. Will you help build the wall bigger? Will you put your brick in? Will you build it better than you found it? Or will you not? What is your turn? There is so much that's gone before you. Our department has got a lot of rich history. Our shirt here says 1882. And we do have a lot of rich history, a lot of rich tradition. We need to honor that, but not be held down by it. There's something about tradition that you definitely need to honor the past. And we have a challenge coin. I wish I would have brought one. I'm going to send you guys a challenge coin when I get back. But the back of the coin says, honoring the past, protecting the future.
I love that. I mean, you can't go forward without understanding where you came from.
Absolutely.
Right? Barnum and Bailey had one of their mottos was preserving the past, promoting the future. And it's kind of like that.
Oh, absolutely. I did not know that, actually.
Yes, so
it, you know, you talk about a solid foundation and some very important and tough questions for a would-be cadet that wants to get into the program. You got to have the desire. You've got to have the will. And I feel like it's almost becoming cliche, Pam. A person's got to have that right recipe.
Mm-hmm.
The ingredients have got to come together inside
right.
For any job that you want to get into in the field. Dustin, I do this in every episode. I talk about the challenges of the job. It's when everything comes home and it hits hard and it becomes real. And you know this because you listen to these episodes on the way down to see us. I always go down that road, and I'm going to go down that road with you here because I've just got to ask. Everybody's got a different perspective, and they're in that. But let me take you back to 2011, May 22nd. You look at the stats and by the numbers. 22.1 mile long trace on the ground. The Joplin tornado of that year, 38 minutes from start to finish, ripped through that town, 200 miles per hour, 158 people lost their lives, injured more than 1,100, and just devastation that was not seen on that level. And
absolutely.
Joplin was forever changed and altered. Lives were forever altered and impact. And in many ways, you know, 12 years, fixing to be 13 years. And there are parts of that town that still have not fully recovered or healed. And they may never heal. Getting started in 1999, this year comes up, that stat, that tornado happens. I'd love to get your perspective on it and where you were at, what you were doing, and the impacts that it had, not only on the team that you were surrounded by, but you
right.
yourself. That is stakes. I don't know how.
Yeah, it's, you know, what do you say? Our community, you know, first off, who in their right mind would plan for an event where you would decimate half your town, cut it in half, and lose half of your emergency response force, and then still be able to successfully mitigate it? Now, this is me bragging on the guys that came before me, because I started in 2018 with the Joplin Fire Department. The entire time there was not one 911 call that did not go unanswered.
That's
men and women of the department were absolutely amazing. They were working multiple days in a row, sleeping in the street on whatever they could find to get up to go to work again. It's kind of undescribable. In an odd turn of events, we were living in the Tulsa metropolitan area at the time, but we actually had come up with the family to Branson for the weekend. And we actually got caught in a tornado out on the highway going back. And so we doubled back. My in-laws were living in Briarbrook there in Carl Junction. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of doubled back through some roads and got to there. I made some contacts with some of my friends at Carthage where I was at, and I was like, hey, what can I do to help? They're like, we have no idea. There's nothing left. And so I went into Joplin Station 1, and I said, man, I actually knew the gentleman was sitting there, and said, man, I don't have any equipment. What can I do to help? I'm a paramedic. And they're like, well, you could go down to Memorial Hall. And that's where they'd kind of put together their mobile hospital, if you will.
Makeshift response, because the hospital
absolutely.
Was gone.
Right. So I went down there and did it. Just, you know, compared to what everybody else did, I did nothing. I mean, just honestly, I mean, everybody was there for the long haul because I had to leave the next morning to go to work. I was on shift. So it was, to me, it was extremely helpless. You want to do something, you want to be a part, you want to try to make a difference. And, you know, I had to return back and I had a duty shift coming, you know, the next 24-hour shift. So, it's, you know, the heart of the community is phenomenal. When you walk into it, you still see the scars. You still see some of the faces. When it comes down around to May again, we start the Joplin Memorial Run comes along, and they honor the memories of those in the event themselves. There were so many lives that were changed, so many lives that were lost. And all that we can do now is do our very best in honoring them by preparing for tomorrow and keeping their memory alive.
And again, Pam, that's really, since we've been doing the series, the first time I've actually run down the stats and the numbers. Mm-hmm. It's hard to look back on that. And I think you said it best. The month of May comes around and you have an opportunity to look back, and you have a look back to remember nobody is ever going to forget that that storm, and you see it, you know, whether it's businesses or how the landscape changed or when everybody comes together, those scars, those wounds that have just not, they've just not healed.
They have not.
I can't imagine what it's like as well, whether it's May or it's storm season in Joplin, if the alerts and the sirens go off in Joplin. What is that like within the department on an emergency level? And it's not the same, it's different, but when you hear those sirens go off and this is just a normal day, this is protocol, right. What goes through the minds of the department and the fire teams when you hear a siren go off these days?
You know, as far as the department goes, the department has been pretty resilient.
Yeah.
I will tell you, if you look at our demographics, you will see that there is a window that you have people that were there before the tornado.
Mm-hmm.
You have the people that were there from 1 to 5 years or so during the tornado.
Yeah.
Are no longer there. They have moved to different departments. They've moved to different jobs. They moved to different careers. It took a huge toll on the men and women of our department. It took a huge toll on the city itself, right?
I'm glad you brought that up.
And so in reality, we're actually a very young department.
You've had to recover your numbers.
Absolutely. So there's been, you know, that turnover. And I understand they went through things, and I'll sit down and every now and then one of the guys will want to, you know, share their story, and you just sit there in kind of awe, and I'm like, I don't know what to say. I the things that they describe and went through and saw, and it's changed them. So their hearts are to serve and to protect. They're 100% sold, bought in. You know, we have our facilities, all of our new structures are all have built-in tornado shelters. You know, you won't go around the city of Joplin without finding multiple everywhere at this point. So all of our city facilities have that stuff built into it. So they know that they're safe, and they know that, you know, statistically speaking, there's going to be another event. You know, recently we had a tornado that just went to the north of the airport. That would have been in 2018, 2019.
So right around the time you got settled
absolutely.
In. We're
yeah,
going
just,
full
it went
tilt
through Carl
there,
Junction. Yeah. We just bought a house, and it was about 4 hours into the incident, and I called the fire chief of that district, and I said, just curious, is the house I bought still there? Because we haven't moved in. He's like, no, it just clipped the neighborhood. Your house is fine. I'm like, oh, that's good to know. So that was good to know. You know, from the lessons that were learned there with the, and it was an F3 tornado that went through a heavy populated area. There was not one injury, not one. There was task force stood up there. The ambulance service had brought a ton of equipment in. So had, you know, all the area fire departments, including Joplin. They were literally a half mile out on standby ready, mm-hmm. and then started pouring in behind the damage. And I, you know, I would say we're more resilient, more ready than we ever have been. But saying that is not trying to discredit what the men and women did during that day in, well, weeks, right? They did everything that they could do. They saved life and property. Like it was just amazing what they had done and accomplished.
So can I ask you, you said there's multiple tornado shelters across your city. Did the city have to like enact a special tax or anything like that to pay for those, or how did those come about?
That's a great question. I don't know as far as, you know, the publicly funded stuff. I know like all the schools that pretty much kind of took care of itself, mm-hmm. with what happened at the high school, you know, the devastation, the damage that was there. And then after every one was rebuilt, they made sure they incorporate that into the construction, and all the businesses that came back incorporated something like that into that. There's now, you know, public shelters in different areas. All the fire station have shelters available.
And so you incorporated that into the new buildings that you're building for the fire stations and stuff.
Yeah.
So
every
that's a
of
piece
the,
of that model.
Yeah. Every one of the fire stations that have been constructed out of that, which would be, 4 of the current 6 have built-in safe rooms. They're rated for an F5 tornado.
Wow.
So that
just tells you mm-hmm. the scale,
yeah.
and the impact that storm had in 2011.
And they
it's
recognize
everything, permitting,
that they have to do
coding.
Something right.
Right. And, you know, I worked for several years in the Tulsa metropolitan area. We didn't have any tornado shelters in those departments, none whatsoever in any of the stations I worked in. So kind of, you know, it's, obviously it's a very good thing to have.
It opens the eyes of the entirety of the United States.
It does.
I mean, it's a totally different situation, but you think about what happened on Maui.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And that's kind of unbelievable as you're doing your studying and you're looking at different events. And, you know, we try to learn from history and look at like the great, you know, Chicago fire or some of those fires like in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking back in the 1900s, right? The turn of the century, where they would literally burn miles off. And you're like, how did that ever happen? And how would that happen again? That would never happen again in a modern city. And turn the news on. And I can't even imagine what that community is going through, let alone that department. Words fail. I pray for those guys, and I say guys, men and women of the fire service.
It's heart wrenching. I mean, you know, I was watching some of the latest news reports, and they were hoping that the number of dead, that number was going to go down as time goes up, and they were hoping that the unaccounted for number was going to minimize. It was going to start to go down, but it continues to increase. I think the number right now, they're still over 1,000 that are missing, and you know, only half of the burn zone has been accounted for at this point right now.
Oh, wow.
That just, I mean, the scale is so massive. And that leads me to another question, because really one of the things that is a focus for Pam and I is really to bridge the gap between the emergency worker and the community, and to help that understanding, right? Whether it is something of that scale in 2011 in Joplin, it is the daily community service and the work that goes on behind the scenes to help community members get a better understanding. Because and you framed it as far as the recovery of the numbers of staff since 2011 to 2023, rebuilding the department, young, fresh faces there. If we're waiting for a call, if a house is being tended to, a property or a structure is on fire, to help us understand a little bit better within the Joplin department and training that goes into it, what is a typical day like? I mean, from your busiest to your slowest, I mean, obviously, right, to help us better understand what you guys deal with on a daily basis, what is call volume like? What is a long day for a member of the Joplin Fire Department to help us understand a little bit better?
On a typical day, we'll respond anywhere from 35 to 55 calls for emergency services.
In a day?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Our department stays very busy, but we take our job very, very seriously, and there is a lot of training that happens because it's muscle memory thing, right? You do it, the podcast I listened to, the chief had said, over-prepared and underwhelmed, and that stuck with me, and I'm totally going to steal that. I will totally give him credit, but I'm stealing that.
The message,
Chief,
is expanding in the community here, yeah.
And that's Chief Ted Martin, I think, that said that.
Chief Martin,
so we're going to give
you,
him the credit for it.
Yeah, over-prepared to be underwhelmed, and you'll see it, and the public sometimes doesn't understand it. They guys roll up, and they expect them to jump off and run.
Oh,
they don't.
Because that's the
off.
Way they do it on TV, right?
They come off, and they're not running, and you're like, what are they doing? They're so used to this. They're so well-trained that they are underwhelmed. We call it, the term is moving with purpose. Because if you run on the fire ground, you're going to get hurt. You're going to trip over something. Somebody's going to get hurt. You move with purpose.
Yeah.
We don't walk. We move with purpose. So you'll see these individuals, they roll off the truck, and they're doing, everybody's got their scripted role, and everybody's walking and moving and getting things set up. And the next thing you know, it's just done. And you're like, oh, well, I didn't even see anybody get excited.
Because
they don't, because they, one, they do the job so much, but two, they drill on it. It's something that, you know, when they sit in, sit in their downtime, they'll get on the, try to find a podcast, or they'll try to find some type of a training, something they've seen before. They'll get out and get in their community to walk through buildings or just learn where the new structures are or how they're built. They'll study new roads. They're always checking and, making sure all their equipment's working. And that takes some time because the modern fire apparatus is a massive rolling toolbox of expensive equipment. And these guys are literally subject matter experts on every piece of that equipment. Our new hires are giving what we call a red book, and they actually have to go through each apparatus and by memory detail what's in every compartment. Because that's the job, right? It's just no different than when you're in your office working and you open this drawer to grab this pen. We need to say, be able to look at whatever member it might be and say, I need, the hook off of engine 2, or I need whatever that might be. Go get me a tarp. I need a water can, whatever that is. And they walk straight to it and get it.
And, you know, that's a pretty good fleet. We have six stations getting ready to be seven. And these guys take that serious. They do. They drill. They train. We have an amazing drill yard. We're always working to better ourselves in one way or the other. And that's the true heart of the department is what can we do better? Our mission statement abbreviated is compassionate customer service. That is what our men and women do. That is the litmus test, if you will, for our decision making. I have sat in more than one staff meeting as we're discussing a policy or a change or something we're considering. And we're like, well, what's the fallout going to be on the people, or what's the fallout going to be on our personnel? And somebody will say, well, does it provide compassionate? Because somebody will always jump in there and say, does it provide compassionate customer service? So usually it's our deputy chief, which is awesome. He kind of keeps us in line. And he's like, well, usually, you know, what does that look like? What does that do for Joe Public? How do we offer a service? Because it is. These are our customers. We are there to be servants to our community. And to go our above and beyond is it's built on a heart for our community and a love for just each other that it doesn't matter if you need whatever you need help with doing at your house. I have the privilege of actually chairing the awards committee, something we've recently started because I think we need to celebrate the men and women that go above and beyond. We need to celebrate that. That needs to be public. These individuals, they need to know how much they're appreciated and respected.
We get to be a small part of
Absolutely.
That here on this podcast.
And they need to know that from their administration. The old days of, well, that's what you signed up for, get over it. That doesn't exist. That was not okay. We're looking at things a lot different. Our greatest asset is our personnel. My greatest responsibility is to make sure that they have everything they need. They need something. That, at this point, I've been there 5 years, and I would like to think there's individuals that they'll just call my phone. Hey, I need a little help. Absolutely, what you got? And that's what we have to be, right? We're there to protect those that are protecting you. Now, that's how I see my job now. Instead of being on the front line, rolling off a fire apparatus every day, my job is to make sure that they have all the tools, equipment, and training they need. But, you know, their heart is amazing. And that's what I love so much about our department, looking through these submissions about, you know, one crew went to this call or they were driving back and saw somebody with a flat tire. They just pull over and change the tire. One gentleman had a medical emergency out in the yard, and so after they transported him, they went ahead and finished all the yard work.
I love that.
That's our people, and I don't want to say it's commonplace, to be really honest. It's more the rule than the exception within the people of, honestly, the four-state area, just period. When you look at emergency services as a whole, you will see the police officer pull over to help somebody on the side of the road change a tire. You will see the whatever that looks like. We're very blessed in our area, and I'm biased. I think, you know, our department has the best. But looking at the heart of the individuals in our in the four-state area, in the Ozark community, it's phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal to be a part of that.
So that's why we wanted to do this podcast, is because, and I'm glad to hear you say that your leadership is really starting to acknowledge when someone goes above and beyond.
Yeah.
Because to them, it's probably just another day, and they don't think anything about it because that's just part of who they are, right? They have to have that heart to do it. And so when Josh and I were talking about this, I'm like, our community needs to understand who these people really are. They need to see the heart. That's why it's called the heart of the emergency worker. That heart that is so much more than just what the job title is, right? And you could be the best at something, and if you don't do it with heart, it loses something.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
And so we want to hear these stories. We want our community to hear these stories because, number one, we want there to be more gratitude for the people who do step up. Go back to last winter when we were, hit with such horrible weather and the linemen were out,
bad.
You know, hearing the linemen talk about, you know, what it's like to be, you know, up in those high winds and, you know, driving snow and trying to get, you know, power restored and, you know, people complaining. Well, nobody wants to be without power, including me.
Right.
But it's like, can we have, it's okay to be frustrated if you don't have it, but let's remember there are people out there literally risking their lives to make sure that you're going
to
have power.
To make us, to make us whole.
In dangerous situations, driving the snowplow, trying to clear off these curvy, steep, hilly roads that we have here.
Absolutely.
You know, so that you can get to work or you can get a family member to the hospital. Let's just remember to be kind, and let's have a sense of gratitude, because not everyone is called to do what you do, right?
It takes
someone special, someone that's willing to go the extra mile, someone that's willing to not drive past the person with the flat tire on the side of the road, that is always going to stop and help, someone that's not going to just take the guy to the hospital that was doing his yard, but they're going to say, we need to help. We need to finish that. He's not going to be able to do it. Those are the kind of people that we see. That's what our beautiful area is made up as of, these people that are so willing to go above and beyond. And again, y'all don't think anything about it. That's just part of the day's work, right? And I think that's what makes it so special, because if you were doing it for the recognition, it would lose something and it wouldn't be that genuine. But you just do it because that's who we are and that's what we do. So I love that.
Well, I appreciate that. I'd like to touch on the lineman issue. So there's a going joke, obviously, every emergency service is that, you know, firemen exist so police can have heroes. right? But when you want to talk about real linemen, you could not pay me enough to get in one of those trucks near high voltage. I'm telling you right now, I don't know of any fireman that would be willing to be like, I'll go do that for you. No way. I have more than a healthy degree of respect for those individuals. That is so outside my comfort zone, words can't even describe. Yeah. But speaking of, kind of the heart, we have a pretty good conversation at times with, honestly, I give a little bit of a speech at a graduation for new recruits. And I tell them that of all the things we've trained you, of all the things that you know, all the certifications you now have, one, this is the base knowledge. Never stop learning, right? Never, ever, ever stop learning, because the world's moving. If you are not learning, you're not sitting still. You're going backwards. So never stop learning. But two, never underestimate the power of hope, because of all the tools that we have when we arrive on your scene, we can pull up with, millions of dollars of fire equipment and, 15 guys. The most powerful tool we have is hope. Because as they pull up, that's what the individual sees. The individual that's having the worst day of their life, when they see that fire truck or that police car or that ambulance roll up, they hope it can change.
Yeah.
And when we pull off, we have to understand that the gravity and the weight of that trust that is placed on us, we can in no way breach that trust. But use that hope. Take that opportunity to make a difference. Because in our job, we are blessed in that we get opportunities that the normal person does not get. We are given opportunities to intervene or say a good word or some type of an action on somebody's very worst day. It's the worst day of their life at times. And to us, it may be just another call, but we have to realize the gravity of we have an opportunity to interject hope into a hopeless situation. And this is something that Joplin understands. If you can remember back in 2011, the high school, the sign where it had blown off all the letters except for the O and the P of Joplin, and somebody took duct tape and put hope, because that's what the community needed more than anything, was a hope for a better day. And I really believe that, actually. I tell them that, have you ever heard of the butterfly effect?
Yes.
Right? Where if you were to make one small change, like back in time or something like that, you go back in time and make a left instead of a right, that it would totally alter the future that you knew. And there's a lot of people that actually believe that and, think that that's probably an accurate theory. Yet how many of us don't believe that today that we can make a very small action and absolutely change the world for somebody else? Mm-hmm. Whether it's opening a door, whether it's saying, hi, how are you doing? Providing a smile. All of our fire trucks have a little kid's helmet and a coloring book on it. And our guys, I see it so much, their faces light up when they get the opportunity to grab a kid, that sounded wrong, to take and have opportunity to interject that hope into a child's life of, hey, come look at our fire truck. I mean, they'll stop whatever they're doing at the grocery store, washing the truck, whatever it is, to interject that hope, to be a part of that, whatever that looks like. So again, I think hope is our greatest tool. There's so many people in emergency services that understand that and understand
that the greatest way they can make a difference is just by being kind. I get a little bit of a kick at a time. So you'll go to Walmart or you'll go somewhere and maybe the register backs up and or something happens or something doesn't scan right or the food gets misordered and they come back and they're so apologetic. I'm so sorry. It's like, this is not a big deal. If this is the worst thing that happens today, we are having a great day, right? Yeah. So don't think twice about it and let's keep going.
You know, I heard you say something, and Josh, we've sat through all of these, and I think almost every person that's been on here has said the same thing. This may be the worst day of this person's life, and it may just be a normal day, routine call for you.
Yeah.
But learning to be sensitive to the fact that just because it's a routine call for you doesn't take away from the fact that this could be the absolute worst day of someone's life that you're going to try to help and change and make better. And I think that's how heroes think, right? It's
100%.
Making sure that you acknowledge what that person is going through and then leaving them hope. And every single person that's been on here has almost said something identical around that same thing.
Well, and in keeping us on time and with this particular episode, I want Dustin to have the final word as we wrap up this episode. And it's a good question for you, sir. Being that you have put all this time into the community in Joplin and you help these new recruits get ready to continue that tradition and that legacy and serve Joplin to the best of their ability, all this time that you've been in that community and everything that you have seen to this point, what has been the best thing that you have gotten out of being within the Joplin community and having the ability to serve them as you have? What would you say has been the best part of that since you have been doing so?
You know, that's a great question. And I don't know if there's a singular answer to that. My first year in Joplin, we have a kids' Christmas banquet. We do a lot of toys and food and stuff. And I was there, and I started in August, and here it is, Christmas. And so I'm, 3-4 months in.
Yeah.
And somehow my picture makes the front page. And I'm thinking, wow, this is so not fair. You know, these guys have worked for years to build this, and here the new guy comes in and gets his picture taken. But I had got down on a knee, and there's the most adorable young little girl with pigtails. And so I was on my knee and shaking her hand and welcoming her in. And it's not that it captured me. It captured what I got to see in her smile. And the greatest thing for me on a daily basis is seeing the impact that we get to make on others. It's, to see that smile come to someone that couldn't. It's seeing that light come on, that register that there is a better day coming. And a lot of times it's, some of your peers coming up and saying, I appreciate that. Thank you. Because my job, like I said, is transition. I'm not jumping off the truck and running in. There's guys that are doing that right now today. The greatest gratitude right now in my current position is when one of the guys in your department comes up and said, "You were spot on. That training you gave us, that equipment you gave us, it was perfect. It's exactly what we needed." That's just awesome to me, because that's my goal, right? My success lies in their success. So seeing the bigger picture and just realizing that the amazing opportunity that I've been blessed with, and not taking advantage of that. That's my biggest concern is, when I look back, I want to say, yeah, I took advantage of those opportunities. It's something that, I really look forward to, is those opportunities, those small things, that really make a difference in people's lives.
This has been just an absolutely remarkable episode. You are listening to the Branson Podcast Network and what is the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series. And our feature subject, our very special guest, is Dustin Luno. He is with the Joplin Fire Department, Assistant Chief of Training there. And folks, you've seen really a full circle story, a small town boy, great roots, a wonderful mother and father, a mom that continues to serve in a passionate pursuit of education, not one to rest on her laurels and is never done. A father who served proudly in the military, in the Air Force, but also a man who is passionate about his own pursuits, could put anything together. drove those two things into their amazing son, and a son who found an ability to serve and to come back to his community. Never really left that small town life. Great advice from a grandmother that led him down the path that he continues to pursue today. That drive and passion with a mother and father that stays with him to this point, and it's something that he has an obligation and his own will and drive to put into his cadets so that they continue to carry that tradition and passion on in the community of Joplin, and a wonderful, wonderful servant's heart. Dustin, I cannot say thank you enough. This has been just an incredible near 55 minutes of great conversation. I'm glad you listened to the network, but I'm glad you had an opportunity to share your story. It is valuable to us. It's valuable to the community of Joplin, but also here in Ozark Mountain Country, Taney and Stone Counties, and everywhere this podcast is listened to. It continues to reinforce an appreciation for us as community members, but also provides us valuable insight in the day-to-day operation and what goes on behind the scenes. 30 to 50 calls, training and drills. We now know what goes on, and it helps us appreciate what comes back to us as community members. So I cannot say thank you enough. A very, very great story. Thank you for the time.
Thank you for having me, and I appreciate what you guys are doing to help us get, you know, just a little bit of a voice out there and to, you know, highlight such the amazing men and women that do serve our communities.
It is our pleasure. Pam Yancey, dear, I tell you what, I'm taken aback. This is one I'm going to be listening to several times over. And we hope that that Dustin's story and his team in Joplin impacts you profoundly. But most importantly, Pam, it goes without saying, our service members in Joplin, if you are in there amongst the fire team, if you're a police, if you work with the ambulance district up there in Joplin, here locally, any county you're in, if you are in the emergency field out there, you've got a story, and we want to know about it, and we want to share it and tell it.
That's been a great episode today, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
Really, really has. This is the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series, Branson Podcast Network. If you would like to nominate somebody in the emergency field, we would love to know about that story. The nomination form is right there on the main page where you are listening to these episodes. Please consider a submission so we can tackle that story and share it with our community members here on the Branson Podcast Network. For Josh Grisham, Pam Yancey, we will see you on the next episode as we have more stories to tell and we've got more heroes to share. Branson Podcast Network.